Have you ever felt like different parts of yourself were at war? Perhaps you've experienced a moment where the responsible adult in you battles with your impulsive inner child, while a judgmental parental voice criticizes both sides? This isn't just poetic language. It's the core insight of Eric Byrne's groundbreaking work, Transactional Analysis in Psychotherapy. When this book was published in 1961, it revolutionized how we understand human personality and interaction, introducing concepts that would later become cultural touchstones through Byrne's bestseller, Games People Play. Celebrities from Hillary Clinton to Elon Musk have cited Byrne's influence on their understanding of human dynamics. Even today, over 60 years later, transactional analysis remains a vital therapeutic approach used worldwide with dedicated institutes in over 60 countries. What makes this framework so enduring? Its remarkable ability to make complex psychological concepts accessible without sacrificing depth, allowing us to see ourselves and our relationships with unprecedented clarity. At the heart of Byrne's theory lies a revolutionary concept. Each person contains not one personality, but three distinct ego states: parent, adult, and child. These aren't metaphorical constructs, but observable psychological realities that manifest in our behavior, speech patterns, and physical postures. The parent ego state embodies internalized authority figures, primarily our parents or caretakers. When in this state, we might wag our finger disapprovingly, use words like always and never, or adopt a righteous tone. This state contains both nurturing elements, offering comfort and protection, and controlling aspects, imposing rules and making judgments. Mrs. Primus, one of Byrne's patients, would shift into a prim, moralistic state during therapy, speaking in platitudes and sitting rigidly upright, her parent ego state taking executive control. The adult ego state functions as our data processing center, analyzing information objectively and making rational decisions based on evidence rather than emotion or received wisdom. When operating from this state, we speak in measured tones, ask clarifying questions, and consider probabilities rather than absolutes. Mr. Segundo demonstrated this state when managing his finances with remarkable acumen, despite chaotic behavior in other areas of his life. The child ego state preserves the feelings, thoughts, and behaviors from our early years. This isn't merely regression, but the activation of a complete psychological system that once dominated our personality. The child manifests in spontaneous emotions, creativity, curiosity, and playfulness, but also in tantrums, manipulation, and magical thinking. Mrs. Tedder's whining behavior and hand-wringing revealed her child state in action, complete with the same emotional intensity she experienced decades earlier. What makes Byrne's model so powerful is its basis in neurological evidence. Neurosurgeon Wilder Penfield discovered that electrical stimulation of certain brain areas caused patients to relive past experiences completely, not just remembering them, but re-experiencing the original emotions and interpretations. This suggested that ego states are physiologically preserved, complete systems that can be reactivated under certain conditions. When Mrs. Primus heard voices telling her she was wicked, she wasn't hallucinating new content. Her parent ego state was literally speaking to her child. The boundaries between these ego states prove crucial for psychological health. In well-functioning individuals, each state operates appropriately to the situation, with clear demarcation between them. Problems arise when boundaries become either too rigid, creating exclusion, or too permeable, allowing contamination. Mr. Troy demonstrated exclusion by operating almost exclusively from his parent state, making him pompous and inflexible. Conversely, prejudice represents contamination, when parental judgments intrude into the adult's territory and are mistaken for rational conclusions. While structural analysis examines the inner architecture of personality, transactional analysis focuses on how these structures interact between people. Every social exchange consists of transactions, stimulus-response pairs between specific ego states. The magic of Burns' approach lies in making these invisible patterns visible, allowing us to understand why some conversations flow smoothly while others derail catastrophically. In complementary transactions, communication proceeds smoothly because the vectors remain parallel. When Dr. Q asks a patient, "What brings you here today?" adult to adult, and receives a factual response, the transaction completes cleanly. Similarly, when a mother comforts a crying child, parent to child, who then stops crying and accepts comfort, their ego states align perfectly. Problems arise with cross-transactions, where the response comes from an unexpected ego state or is directed to an unintended one. Camellia's tearful reaction, child, to Rosita's factual question, adult, exemplifies this pattern. Instead of adult-to-adult communication, Camellia perceived criticism and responded emotionally, derailing their conversation. Such cross-transactions explain countless arguments, misunderstandings, and communication breakdowns. More complex are ulterior transactions, where apparent social-level exchanges mask psychological-level agendas. Consider Mrs. Dodicus, who complained about her husband's restrictions. "If it weren't for you, I could travel and enjoy life." On the surface, this appears to be an adult-to-adult statement of fact. The hidden transaction, however, involves her child speaking to his parent, saying, "See how you make me suffer?" while simultaneously absolving herself of responsibility. Such multi-level communications form the basis of psychological games. Burns' genius was recognizing that these transactions aren't random, but follow predictable patterns. Once you identify which ego states are operating in each person, you can predict with remarkable accuracy how their interactions will unfold. This insight transforms therapy from vague exploration to precise intervention, showing exactly where and how communication breaks down. Beyond simple transactions lie games, recurring series of complementary ulterior transactions leading to a well-defined psychological payoff. These aren't conscious strategies, but unconscious patterns learned in childhood that structure our social time while providing psychological advantages. Consider "Why Don't You, Yes But," a game where one person presents a problem while systematically rejecting every solution offered. The ostensible purpose is seeking help, but the ulterior motive is demonstrating that no one can solve their unique predicament. When Mrs. Traddock played this game, she wasn't consciously manipulating others. She genuinely believed she wanted solutions. Yet her child ego state ensured she remained the center of attention while proving no one could dominate her. Another classic game is Uproar, where a couple regularly erupts into arguments that prevent genuine intimacy. Mrs. Anatosky and her husband had perfected this game. Whenever sexual closeness threatened, one would provoke the other until conflict ensued, protecting both from vulnerability while satisfying their need for intense engagement. Wooden leg players claim exemption from normal expectations due to some disadvantage. "What do you expect from someone with my background?" The game provides an excuse for inadequacy while eliciting sympathy. One patient consistently used her alcoholic past this way until therapy helped her recognize this pattern. Games differ from simple diversions by their repetitive nature, hidden agendas, and negative payoffs. While they provide immediate psychological benefits, avoiding intimacy, confirming negative beliefs, or structuring time, they ultimately prevent authentic connection and growth. The alcoholic's game involves not just drinking, but recruiting others into predictable roles. Persecutor: "You should be ashamed." Rescuer: "Let me help you." And Patsy, the enabler. Each participant receives psychological dividends while perpetuating the destructive pattern. Burns' therapeutic breakthrough was recognizing that games could be disrupted once made conscious. When patients learned to identify their favorite games, they gained the option to continue playing or choose healthier alternatives. This represented a radical shift from traditional psychoanalysis. Rather than years exploring unconscious motivations, patients could achieve rapid improvement by recognizing and changing their transactional patterns. Beyond individual games lies an even more profound concept, the life script, an unconscious life plan formed in childhood that shapes our entire destiny. Scripts explain why people repeatedly create similar situations despite conscious intentions to change. The woman who serially marries alcoholics isn't simply unlucky. She's unconsciously casting partners for a drama written decades earlier. Scripts originate in childhood protocols, primal scenes or experiences that establish core beliefs about ourselves and others. These protocols develop into scripts proper during adolescence, then manifest as adaptations in adult life. Mrs. Catters exemplified this process. As a child, she fantasized about her father dying after feeling displaced by her brother's birth. In adulthood, she married a philandering pilot and fantasized about his plane crashing, making her a tragic widow, essentially recasting her childhood drama with new actors. Scripts contain specific roles, protagonist, antagonist, victims, rescuers, and follow dramatic structures with distinct beginnings, middles, and ends. They can be tragic, ending in defeat, banal, maintaining the status quo, or constructive, leading to fulfillment. Most importantly, they operate outside awareness. We don't choose our scripts consciously, but feel compelled to complete them. The therapeutic goal isn't necessarily script abandonment, but script awareness. When Mrs. Catters recognized her unconscious pattern, she gained freedom to modify it. Her adult ego state could now intervene when her child began orchestrating familiar scenarios, allowing her to write new chapters rather than repeating the same story. Script analysis reveals why conventional advice often fails. We're not dealing with simple habits, but complex psychological dramas with powerful emotional investments. The alcoholic doesn't just drink. He fulfills a role in a larger narrative that may have begun with an alcoholic parent. Changing the behavior requires understanding and rewriting the underlying script. Byrne's approach offers unprecedented clarity about relationship dynamics by breaking down interpersonal interactions into specific ego state transactions. When analyzing Mr. Kinz's relationship with Miss Olef, he identified 9 possible vectors between their ego states: parent to parent, parent to adult, parent to child, adult to parent, adult to adult to child to parent, child to adult, and child to child. Only one vector functioned smoothly, his parent to her child, explaining why their relationship felt simultaneously compelling and unsatisfying. Their other interactions were marked by cross-transactions and miscommunication. By contrast, Mrs. Catters and Mrs. Beth had 7 compatible vectors, predicting their friendship's remarkable stability and demonstrating how multiple harmonious channels of communication strengthen relationships. This framework explains why some couples remain together despite constant conflict. Their games and scripts may be perfectly complementary, creating a psychological lock that's difficult to break. The Penties exemplified this pattern. His erythrophobia, fear of blushing, and her domineering personality created a stable system where she could control social situations while he had a legitimate excuse for avoiding them. Their game of if it weren't for you provided mutual benefits despite their complaints. He could blame her for his social limitations while she maintained control, each fulfilling deep-seated psychological needs through their seemingly dysfunctional dynamic. Marriage particularly reveals script dynamics through 3 distinct layers of commitment. The formal contract, legal marriage, often masks the relationship contract, who plays parent-child roles, and the secret contract between 2 child ego states, the unconscious script agreement. For instance, a couple might present themselves as equals publicly while privately operating in a parent-child dynamic, with an even deeper unconscious agreement about recreating childhood trauma patterns. Couples select partners not randomly, but based on script requirements, seeking someone who will play the complementary role in their psychological drama. When the Septums developed a complex arrangement with another couple involving shared vacations and financial entanglements, they vehemently denied this was their intention from the beginning. Yet analysis revealed premarital fantasies and subtle moves in precisely that direction. Their scripts had been guiding them all along, manifesting in seemingly coincidental life choices. Therapeutic success in relationships doesn't necessarily mean changing partners with changing transactions through conscious awareness and intervention. By recognizing their games and scripts, couples can develop new patterns of interaction based on adult-to-adult communication. This creates a psychological divorce within the formal marriage, allowing the possibility of psychological remarriage on healthier terms. Success stories range from couples achieving better controlled turbulence, where they maintain awareness of their patterns and actively manage them, to genuine rediscovery of each other without the distortions of unconscious games. Some couples report feeling like they're meeting their partner for the first time after decades together, having shed the script-based roles that previously defined their relationship. Byrne's approach revolutionized psychotherapy by offering clear, systematic methods for addressing diverse psychological problems. For active psychosis, treatment focuses on strengthening the adult ego state while allowing the child appropriate expression. With Mrs. Primus, the therapist waited patiently during her confused phase, addressed her adult when it emerged, and gradually helped reestablish its dominance. For neuroses, treatment progresses through distinct stages: structural analysis, identifying ego states; transactional analysis, examining interaction patterns; game analysis, recognizing repetitive sequences; and script analysis, uncovering life patterns. The goal is social control, maintaining adult awareness during interactions, even when others attempt to activate one's child or parent. Mrs. Anatosky's case demonstrates this progression. In just 16 sessions, she moved from depression and marital discord to genuine happiness. First, she learned to recognize her three ego states. Then, she identified her games with husband and son. Finally, she confronted her seductive behavior pattern, first-degree rapo, that had sabotaged intimacy. The transformation extended beyond her own feelings. Her husband came home whistling for the first time in years, and her children became more affectionate and helpful. Group therapy proves particularly effective for transactional analysis because it provides immediate examples of games and scripts in action. When Camelia burst into tears after Rosita's factual question, the group could observe the cross-transaction directly. Similarly, when Mrs. Sayers reached awkwardly for an ashtray, almost fell, then apologized with embarrassed laughter, the group witnessed her life script condensed into seconds, working hard for minimal recognition while expecting failure. What makes Byrne's approach so powerful is its combination of depth and accessibility. Unlike traditional psychoanalysis, which might take years to uncover unconscious patterns, transactional analysis often produces rapid insights and behavioral changes. Yet it doesn't sacrifice psychological sophistication. The advanced concepts of second-order structural analysis, recognizing that the child contains its own parent, adult, and child, provide frameworks for addressing even the most complex cases. The brilliance of Byrne's system lies in its applicability beyond clinical settings. By understanding ego states, transactions, games, and scripts, we gain powerful tools for improving all relationships. Parents learn to address their children's adult capabilities rather than just their child behavior, fostering independence and critical thinking from an early age. For example, instead of saying, "because I said so," a parent might explain, "let's think about why this rule exists." Managers recognize when they're triggering employees' child responses through parental criticism, learning to replace "you always make this mistake" with "let's review the process and identify improvement areas." The framework illuminates common workplace dynamics. A supervisor operating from critical parent might unknowingly provoke rebellious child responses in team members, creating a cycle of poor performance and increased criticism. By shifting to adult-to-adult communication, productivity and morale often improve dramatically. Couples identify their recurring games, like why don't you, yes but, or if it weren't for you, and develop healthier alternatives through direct communication and genuine problem solving. The framework also explains broader social phenomena. Cultural prejudices represent contamination of the adult by the parent on a societal scale, where outdated beliefs override rational analysis. Political rhetoric often appeals to specific ego states. Some candidates address the adult with facts and figures, while others activate the parent through moral imperatives or the child through emotional appeals. Marketing strategies similarly target different ego states. Luxury brands often speak to the child's desire for pleasure, while safety-focused advertisements appeal to the protective parent. Perhaps most importantly, transactional analysis offers a path to authentic intimacy. Byrne distinguished between games, which substitute for genuine connection, and intimacy, direct engagement without ulterior motives. True intimacy becomes possible when we recognize our games and scripts, allowing our adult to mediate between child spontaneity and parental ethics. This creates relationships based on mutual awareness rather than unconscious manipulation. In practice, this might mean acknowledging our defensive patterns, expressing vulnerable feelings directly, and staying present with others' authentic responses rather than falling into familiar game patterns. The methodology provides practical tools for social change as well. Community leaders can use TA concepts to identify destructive patterns in group dynamics and facilitate more effective collaboration. Educational institutions can apply these principles to create learning environments that nurture both intellectual growth and emotional intelligence, addressing students as whole people rather than just their academic child or compliant child aspects. 6 decades after its introduction, transactional analysis remains remarkably relevant. Its language has permeated popular culture. We routinely speak of our inner child, recognize when someone is being parental, and identify mind games in relationships. Its concepts have influenced fields from education to business management, offering frameworks for understanding human interaction across contexts. In corporate settings, managers use TA principles to improve communication and resolve conflicts, while educators apply these concepts to create more effective learning environments and understand student-teacher dynamics. What makes Byrne's approach so enduring is its balance of simplicity and depth. The basic concepts, parent, adult, child, are immediately graspable, yet they open doors to profound psychological understanding. The parent ego state encompasses both nurturing guidance and critical control, manifesting in workplace mentorship as well as family dynamics. The adult represents our capacity for rational analysis and fact-based decision-making, crucial in both personal and professional contexts. The child state embodies not only vulnerability, but also creativity, spontaneity, and joy, essential qualities for innovation and authentic connection. Unlike theories that pathologize human behavior, transactional analysis recognizes that everyone has a complete, functioning adult capable of growth and change. The child isn't something to overcome, but a source of vitality and creativity when appropriately channeled. This perspective has proven particularly valuable in therapy, coaching, and personal development, where it offers hope and agency rather than diagnosis and limitation. In our increasingly complex world, where technology often distances us from direct human connection, Byrne's insights about authentic interaction become even more valuable. Social media interactions, remote work relationships, and digital communication all benefit from TA's framework for understanding human dynamics. By recognizing our transactions, games, and scripts, we gain freedom from unconscious patterns that limit our relationships and life choices. For example, understanding how childhood scripts influence our professional decisions can help break self-defeating patterns in career development. The ultimate gift of transactional analysis isn't just psychological insight, but the possibility of genuine autonomy, the ability to write our own stories rather than repeating scripts written in childhood. This becomes particularly relevant in modern contexts, like online dating, where awareness of games and transactions can help people form more authentic connections. TA provides practical tools for identifying and changing patterns in all relationships, from intimate partnerships to professional collaborations. As we navigate our relationships with greater awareness of these hidden dynamics, we discover that understanding the three faces within ourselves and others doesn't diminish human connection, but enriches it. In making the invisible visible, Byrne offered not just a therapeutic technique, but a pathway to more authentic living. This framework continues to evolve, addressing contemporary challenges while maintaining its core insight into human nature and interaction. Transactional analysis reveals that communication operates on multiple levels simultaneously, creating a complex interplay of conscious and unconscious exchanges. Beyond the literal content of our words lies the crucial question of which ego state is speaking to which ego state. This explains why the same sentence, "You're late again," can trigger radically different responses depending on whether it's perceived as adult observation, "Let's problem solve this," parental criticism, "You're irresponsible," or child complaint, "You're making my life difficult." The framework illuminates why certain interactions leave us feeling inexplicably drained, angry, or defensive. When someone addresses our adult, but our child responds, we create cross-transactions that derail communication. For instance, a boss asking, "Could you explain this report?" adult to adult, might trigger a defensive, "You never like my work," child-to-parent response. Similarly, when others direct transactions to our parent, seeking approval or provoking criticism, rather than our adult, we find ourselves pulled into roles we didn't choose, such as the constant advisor or critic. This understanding transforms difficult relationships by revealing the underlying patterns. The chronically complaining colleague isn't simply sharing information, they're inviting you to play "Ain't It Awful?" Recognizing this game allows you to respond from your adult, "I hear this is frustrating. What solutions have you considered?" rather than being recruited as a fellow victim or rescuer. The demanding family member who makes you feel inadequate is activating your child through complementary transactions. Awareness lets you maintain adult functioning. "I understand your concern, but I'll make this decision myself," rather than reverting to childhood patterns of compliance or rebellion. Most powerfully, transactional analysis offers a path beyond games to genuine connection through three key practices: recognition, choice, and integration. By recognizing our habitual patterns, like always seeking approval or avoiding conflict, choosing adult-to-adult communication, "I think rather than you always," and consciously accessing all ego states, we create space for authentic engagement. This doesn't mean abandoning the child's spontaneity, joy, creativity, play, or the parent's values, care, protection, guidance, but integrating them consciously rather than being unconsciously driven by them. In a world increasingly dominated by superficial exchanges and digital communication, Byrne's insights provide a roadmap back to meaningful human connection. By understanding the complex dance of ego states in every interaction, we can move beyond manipulative games toward authentic dialogue. This awareness becomes the ultimate antidote to our modern epidemic of loneliness, offering tools for deeper, more satisfying relationships in both personal and professional contexts.